Good morning, and let me welcome you this morning for a very welcome opportunity to hear from the Ukrainian ambassador to Washington. We were very lucky to have persuaded him to speak here this morning because we knew that this would be a very important time, that Ukraine has been at a crossroads in taking the next step towards not only its internal political and economic development, but in the development of its foreign policy and its relationship with the United States. And before everyone goes off on vacation for the summer, it seems like a good moment to think about where we are and have the opportunity to talk with amongst ourselves, but also with someone who is so knowledgeable and has been already so influential on the issues of U.S.-Ukrainian relations. My name is Celeste Wallander. I'm the director of the Russia and Eurasia Program. My job here is to welcome you and to introduce Ambassador Stephen Pfeiffer. Ambassador Pfeiffer is a senior advisor with CSIS, working primarily on issues relating to Ukraine, but also relating to U.S.-Russia relations and regional security in the Central and Eastern European region as it impacts U.S. relations and interests with those important countries. Before I turn the podium over to Ambassador Pfeiffer, though, I want to point out that U.S.-Ukrainian partnership is important in many ways, and in no less way because now that the U.S. national team is out of the World Cup, us Americans who are watching the World Cup needed a team to root for. So I thought it was important to have not only the official flag, a very important flag to symbolize that partnership. So in that spirit, I'll turn the podium over to Steve Pfeiffer.
Well, Celeste, thanks very much. I'm not sure how to follow that introduction, but let me just briefly introduce the ambassador. We are very pleased to have him with us today. He's had a very distinguished diplomatic career. He served at the Ukrainian embassy in Brussels for 5 years as counselor, and that was the Ukrainian mission to all the Benelux countries. He then came back to Kyiv definitely on a fast track. He headed up the European Union Integration Department, then moved quickly to become deputy foreign minister, and in January arrived here in Washington as Ukraine's ambassador to the United States. And I think we could say he's gotten off to an extremely fast and effective start. If you look at a number of the big issues in U.S.-Ukraine relations, let's see, his first month here, Ukraine was granted market economy status. His second month here, they completed the U.S.-Ukraine WTO bilateral protocol, which we've been working on for 4 or 5 years. And I think his third month here, Ukraine was graduated by Congress from Jackson-Vanik, something that people have been working on for 6 years. So definitely this is a man who, when they are in Kyiv writing up his evaluation for 6 months, has a number of things that are going to definitely be in the plus column. He's also, I think, though, a fairly good predictor of Ukrainian events. We've been talking about doing this talk here at CSIS for, I'd guess, about 2.5 or 3 months now, and we both agreed that it would be better to have this after there was either a government in place or at least a coalition named, because that would allow him to frame his remarks, anticipating that there might be some different directions if there were an orange coalition as opposed to an orange-blue coalition. And as we tried to sort this out about a month and a half ago, he suggested June 29 would be a date that would work, and his predictions proved accurate. He now has a coalition in place, we hope. And so we're looking very much forward to his comments, both about what's going on in Ukraine and also about developments in Ukraine's external relations. The comments today are on the record. Following his prepared remarks, the ambassador has kindly agreed to take questions. So we're looking very much to hearing them. And please join me in welcoming Ambassador Shamshur.
Okay. Madam Ambassador, actually, thank you very much for this introduction, although I always say that after generous introduction, you feel a bit under stress because you have to live up to the expectations. So, first of all, I would like to say that I'm extremely pleased to be here at the CSIS. Definitely, we have been planning it for some time, and I was really happy that the timing was practically right. And I'm quite happy that although I refrained from comments on the possible composition of the coalition due to the official restraints. I made some personal predictions in public, and they were speaking about the orange color, and there is practically no doubt that it would be like that. And, well, I would say in my personal capacity, I feel very much satisfied. As I said, I have been on the speaker's circuit for quite some time due to the continued interest in the developments in my country, before election, during election, after election. And, of course, there is a positive side about that, but there is, or maybe there are some challenges. One of them is that you risk to be boring, at least to yourself, as you are repetitive, more or less, speaking about same things. So as soon as I see some familiar faces in the audience, I would try not to be too repetitive. So identifying maybe some basic things and leaving some space, maybe bigger space for Q&As. Understandably, I will try to concentrate on the positive side of the developments because I'm quite sure you will point out the problematic issues in questions. Maybe also as the second small introduction, presume that everyone is informed about the developments in Ukraine. So we have a coalition agreement, we have a decision in principle on the Prime Minister, practically on the Speaker, on the distribution of major committees and things like that. Now the process is a bit stalled due to developments in the Parliament, but I would like to stress that in my perception it wouldn't, and it's not going to change my overall appreciation of the situation. The only thing which is to be underscored in this regard is definitely that the developments during the last 2 days proves the necessity of the responsible behavior by all political forces, and it definitely applies to the opposition if you want to bring a really constructive relationship between all political actors. So I think it would be appropriate if I start my remarks with maybe some words about the significance of the Orange Revolution. And I would limit myself to a couple of relevant points. So first of all, of course, it was a turning point in Ukraine's contemporary history, history after 1991. So important to note is that the events of early 2005, they marked a popular choice in favor of democracy, in favor of the acceleration of the process of economic reform, and in favor of building a modern, dynamic society. So that was, in a way, a beginning of a new stage in Ukrainian development. So it marked the start of the ultimate departure from the post-Soviet past, the departure which was terminated, in my perception, by the election of 2006. It's also important to state that the significance or relevance of developments in Ukraine in 2004, but also the subsequent developments in 2005, elections of 2006, it definitely transcends the domestic dimension and have a wider regional and not only regional political bearing. When we assess the current situation, we cannot but pose the question, which is being posed quite often, what we make of the year passed after 2004, so 2006, early 2005 and early 2006. So as it's formulated in the topic of today's discussion, 18 years after the Orange Revolution. What kind of the year was that? So I argued continuously, and here I also presume I was quite consistent, saying that the claim that it was the year of lost opportunities definitely is not correct. So it was the year, if I try to summarize it, it was the year of learning of truly democratic governance. It was a difficult year, sometimes grueling one. year of mistakes. Some of the mistakes were definitely avoidable and were painful. But at the same time, this year was absolutely necessary for breaking the ground for the next stage of Ukraine's development, for the next stage of reform process. That was also the year when we got the confirmation, and it was consummated again in election, that the country has changed and changed in a very profound way. Our president, in his article in New York, in the Wall Street Journal, has given a very correct appraisal of the significance of this year and of the election. That was the termination of the post-stage of development of Ukraine. Of course, our list of things to do is very impressive, so very challenging tasks, but they will be decided in a, as I said, radically new political and, to a very great extent, economic and social environment. I've spoken a couple of times about the election. Definitely, I would like maybe to mention a couple of things which are relevant for our today's discussion. So, first of all, the character of election is now being recognized by everyone as just, democratic, transparent, and that was not something what was quite evident from the start, but it was the result of the changes taking place in the society, but also due to the fulfillment of the commitment taken by the president, by the new leadership of Ukraine. And it was very important that the whole process was democratic, not only the process on voting on the election day. Secondly, what was also surprising to many observers, but was very important, that turnout was very respectable, around 70%, which showed that the thesis about disillusionment, not willingness of the Ukrainians to be further engaged in the process of change, doesn't hold water. Thirdly, and what is not often mentioned, but I think it should be mentioned, that the election marked a very severe blow to the communist ideology, cutting the Communist Party of Ukraine to its real size in terms of influence on the societal process. And I would dare say, in my personal capacity, I also hope that the results of the vote would somehow precipitate or encourage the changes, including ideological changes, in the socialist movement in Ukraine. And for me, it's also very important to give the right appreciation of the results of the election. In my perception, the verdict at the polling stations was that people want not less reform, but they would like to see continuation of reform, to see them more consistent, more forward-looking. So, not again, as I said, not to bore you too much about things which have been said already. I would just also draw your attention to a couple of things related to the record of the new leadership in some areas which are sometimes neglected. So it's quite known, it's not contested, the major breakthroughs were made in developing and solidifying of democratic institutions, in ensuring maybe for the first time freedom of expression and the media. It also should be noted, what is not always mentioned, is that we also have seen the radical changes in political process. For the first time, the power was accountable before the population in a real way. And it had to respond to public opinion, to criticism, and it was open for criticism, for control, and the freedom of political choice was ensured. The third thing, which is also neglected, as people try to concentrate mostly on the shortcomings, was that in spite of all maybe deficiencies, we managed to shatter the system of oligarchic control over economy. We also start dismantling the most notorious shadow schemes in economy. We also made very important steps in fighting corruption, which has been endemic until 2005. What is also not very often mentioned, the government can also claim a number of successes in the process of restructuring of economy and making it more transparent, if you wish, more healthy. So I would like to mention that the state budget revenues in 2005 increased by over 50%. And they expected to double by the end of 2006. So that is the unprecedented development in Ukraine's economy, and it's one of the best proofs of this economy coming gradually out of the shadow. Very important thing was made in stepping up efforts of fighting smuggling, which was also very widespread, and the customs revenues in 2005 increased by 80%, which is also quite telling. Although the figures of economic development are not that impressive, but it should be noticed that for the first time they were, maybe in the recent years, they were made on a healthy, robust basis. It's also important that inflation was contained at 10%, 2 points lower than in 2004. A significant increase was achieved in the central bank international reserves, although, of course, the figures are not impressive compared to the reserves in the United States or in Russia, other countries. We also managed to reduce the budget deficit from 3.4 to 1.8% in 2005. And also, it was ensured, the growth of the GDP per capita was ensured as well. It's also well known that the government fulfilled the promise of improving living conditions. So the wages and pensions were increased in a way that real income grew by 20% and social benefits by over 30%. But here I would like to say that one of the challenges which the previous government and the new government will be confronted with, of course, will be to find the correct balance between the understanding necessity and political necessity to improve living conditions and to fulfill long-term macroeconomic goals. The important thing, which is not often mentioned, is that some steps were taken to deregulate the economic procedures. It was mentioned that 10,000 of obsolete regulations were already canceled. The procedures of starting business, of business registration, allotment of non-agricultural land plots for industrial developments have been started as well, and we moved in the direction of creating, ideally, the system, as we say, one window procedures service for opening business, or one stop, as they say in the United States. And finally, maybe for the first time since 1995, they managed to pursue the coherent foreign policy with a very strong emphasis upon human rights, which was not the fact before. Well, now I think we can basically move to the current situation. But before that, I would like just to be objective to say that apart from creating momentum, apart from having positive bearing on the processes in Ukraine, of course, elections highlighted some issues which are to be addressed and addressed on a very urgent basis, one of them being the persistence of regional differences, not simply in voter orientation, not only economically, but also, I would say, in social organization. And these are issues which are extremely important, and one of the challenges for the development of the Ukrainian political system is, of course, to form or create the party which would be able to formulate the program and the message which would have outreach transcending the regional lines, the boundaries of the regions, and the current voters' preferences. So the issue of the coalition building. Of course, everyone, both the friends and maybe critics of Ukraine, have been watching this process with certain impatience. There was a lot of criticism. But I would like actually to say a couple of words which should be said to set the record straight. So definitely it was, and it's still, extremely difficult, challenging, sometimes painful process. But that's the process, and the character of the process, something what everyone has expected, actually, because no one expected that it would be an easy task. especially with the view that the government and the coalition is being formed under the new constitutional rules with the new distribution of power. And one of the major challenges, just maybe moving a bit ahead, would be in the post-election, post-government formation process to ensure the necessary fine-tuning, necessary balance of power and interaction between different branches of power. So firstly, it was expected, but it was done absolutely, and it's being done in a democratic way, within democratic procedures, and for the time being, all the constitutional deadlines were respected. So secondly, I mentioned the new rules of political engagement, which takes time to be accustomed to and to be used efficiently. Thirdly, what is important to mention is, of course, the whole process have been involving a significant amount of horse trading. But it's horse trading more or less of the type you have in all countries. You have in within, especially when you have coalition government, which is quite characteristic of the European political process. But what is important, that the process was not limited to horse trading, and maybe for the first time, the parties who are trying to form the coalition, who have actually formed the coalition, were engaged in a serious discussion on the basic program principles. And this discussion, although definitely there were limits to that due to the character of negotiations, actually I would say it was quasi public, because many issues have been very actively discussed in the society and definitely had impact on the decisions taken by negotiators. Finally, it's also important that the program, as we see it now, it's a compromise. Some parts might have been better, but some parts might have been worse, in a sense that it was the product of compromise between the democratic parties. And on the whole, the program as we see it now is definitely gives a very, I would say, promising blueprint for further development of the Ukrainian society. I would like also to mention that in the embassy we made the translation of the basic lines of basic provisions of the coalition program, and if I'm not mistaken, we have already put it on the website, so if you're interested, you can have some idea how it looks presently. What is also important to mention, that at the end, as I said before, we have the coalition of the democratic forces. Of course, the best proof of the efficiency of the process will be in the stability of the government. Definitely, we shall see these things in the nearest future, but in my personal capacity, I would say that I would say quite optimistic about that, because many things, very important, very difficult things, have been already discussed concerning the program and also concerning the interaction between the different parties of the agreement, and I hope that it augurs well for the stability of the government in future. As far as the program is concerned, I'm not going to go into detail. Maybe I will highlight a couple of priorities for the government. If you're interested, I will try. As I have the program with me, I'll be ready to elaborate on the sum of the program provisions. But for me, it's quite clear that there are some priorities which would be at the top of the list of the government. Definitely the issue of energy, the issue of reforming the energy sector in Ukraine, and also to develop the agreements concerning supply of gas and oil to Ukraine, which would be both efficient and transparent. The issue of fighting corruption. Recently, we signed the so-called threshold program with the Millennium Challenge Corporation. It's one of the signs of the seriousness of the intentions of the new leadership. President is preparing his new program concerning fighting corruption, which will be promulgated, as far as I understand, as soon as the government is formed. So this issue is being taken very seriously. So there are issues which are related to this problem, definitely, that is the need to complete judicial reform to ensure the independence and efficiency of the judiciary, to finish, to complete tax reform. All those things definitely are very important to creating a propitious business climate, to improve it, to improve stability, business confidence, so that it have a positive bearing both internally but also especially on attracting foreign investment. I mentioned already the regulation program is quite explicit as far as the continuation of the regulation is concerned. Definitely it will be helped by the WTO accession, and actually it was one of the points where there was heated discussion how it will be done because of the position of the socialists. It's very good that we have this commitment, and it's mentioned in a couple of provisions, and it also augurs quite well for the final result. The social policy issues are also being addressed. It concerns reform of education, reform of helps, of health system, improving living standards, but also it's very important, I noted in the program when I read it quite attentively, that maybe for the first time we have a very, I would say, bold statement where it said that the coalition would seek cancellation or abolition, rescinding of the laws which have been already passed, but which has populist nature and are not substantiated, are not insured by the budget revenues. For me, it's a very important development. So finally, foreign policy. Apart from program, we have the statement of the foreign minister, and everything shows that the foreign policy is not going to be changed. We have the commitment to pursue the course of European integration. Energy is also figures quite importantly on the foreign policy related issues. And one of the issues which was contested because of the position of the socialist, that is the clause on eventual NATO membership. It's one of the clauses which I would prefer to be formulated maybe more strongly, but that's again a result of the compromise. But the most important is that we have confirmation of the course towards NATO membership, although there is a mention of referendum, but it definitely only also reflects the necessity stepping up our work in this direction, and it's also mentioned specifically in the foreign policy segment of the program. So everything in the program shows that we'll see the continuation of the coherent policy aimed at European and eventual Euro-Atlantic integration. So finally, what I would like to mention, maybe before moving to Q&As, is that, and referring to the topic of today's roundtable, is that, well, definitely the year that passed, year and a half that passed, showed that legacy, but also the lessons of the democratic revolution and the period after revolution definitely are extremely relevant for Ukraine. So it also teaches us very important lesson that revolution, especially revolutions in modern times, they do not create immediate change. Rather, they create opportunities for change. And it's definitely, they foment change. And it's definitely up to the politicians, but not only for the politicians, up also to the general public, to the citizens, to take full advantage of these opportunities for change. It's also important that democratic principles, which were voiced at Maidan, the major square of Ukraine, voiced during discourse at the revolution period, they haven't disappeared. They are still with us. They have become the very solid present part of our societal life. And I would say they have developed in being reference points for our political leaders. It's also interesting that not only the new leadership sometimes, well, it refers always to the ideals of Maidan, but also opposition quite often when it wants to pursue some goals refers to the promises and the principles of Maidan, which in my opinion is a positive development. So we have also learned our painful lessons. We are aware now more than before about of the challenges, and I have that we have a will to succeed. So I would finish on a light note. Actually, I prepared that before that wonderful garment, but it shows that we are also thinking the same direction, and definitely many hopes are centered upon tomorrow's match. But I would like, not trying to predict here, I would be more cautious. But still, I would rather allude to the previous development of our team's progress in these World Championships. So at first, we had very high expectations because they performed very well at the preparatory phase. Then we had, I would say, in this case, it was a resounding defeat, but definitely was a painful exercise. Nevertheless, we proved again to be a comeback kid. Ukraine rebound. Our team persevered, and eventually we won against all the odds. So I hope that it would be a good sort of scenario for Ukraine's development in the years to come. Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to open the floor now for questions. I would ask if you could just briefly, though, state your name and affiliation, and also wait for the microphones, which we have coming around.
First of all, Mr. Ambassador, congratulations on the formation of the government. I would like to say that the government has supported the Ukraine's cry for a closer integration with Europe, Atlantic institution, because we believe it is in Ukraine's interest and in everybody's interest in the region, also in all Ukraine's neighbors, that the country is stable, democratic, and prosperous. And my question is that what does the Ukrainian authority intend to do in order to boost or secure the population support for the current policy objectives, and more specifically for the NATO direction. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Actually, it's one of the questions which is being often asked. I would say that the program, as I mentioned, showed both continuity but also the awareness of the seriousness of the situation. So what I would say is that that finally, for the first time, we have funding for the programs related to public information about the goals of the NATO integration policy. Secondly, and I had a chance to chat with our first Deputy Minister of Defense, who is on the visit here, they've not simply taken serious discussion, but outlined the possible steps to be taken to make this campaign not only more, I would say, expensive in terms of being it a wide campaign, but to make it also more efficient. And now we are considering the best maybe forms and methods of this work, as it should be understood that we cannot work as the previous government worked when they were able more or less, more rather than less, to direct the activities of the media. And you remember those famous techniques, so definitely we cannot resort to this. And it's actually impossible now to follow these practices. So we also should work with the media to develop the best means to actually have this kind of campaign. What is very important, I think, apart from working with the learned, so to say, part of the population, professionals, people like that, it's very important to have the outreach to the wider population. And now it's being considered how it do in the most efficient, in the most efficient way. And definitely what we shall see is more communication with the public at the grassroots level, as I mentioned a couple of occasions, town hall type meetings, as you have here. So now we have finally financing. We have political will, and I think that as soon as the government formed, we'll have some practical steps taken, not in distant, but in immediate future, I presume, as soon as in autumn. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ambassador, thank you for the presentation. My name is Neil Duren. I'm with TD International. You briefly mentioned energy reform in your presentation. I was wondering if you would comment perhaps on government policy to increase domestic production of oil and gas, considering the fact that the country's oil and gas reserve to production ratio is very high.
Thank you. Actually, it's a very good point, and it's one of the most important provisions of the program which has already, well, promulgated concerning the energy reform, but definitely which will be worked over further. It's quite clear. One of the points where we would like to score, one of the points we would like to score, actually, is the increase in domestic production of oil and gas, with the understanding, of course, there are some limits. In this sense, we will be trying to use modern technology in order to extract residual oil and gas reserves in the well-known oil and gas deposits, oil and gas fields. But I think the most promising is that we'll be trying to develop new, especially gas fields in the Black Sea area. So the first tender process has been bidding, actually has been finished. The winner was the American company, which was relatively unknown, but has sound expertise, presented the best business plans. The whole procedure was very transparent. It was the first parcel. We are going to continue bidding for remaining parcels in, I would say it would be done quite soon. So the best hope, in my perception, rests with the deposits of oil, but mostly gas in the Black Sea area. Thank you.
Actually, if I could continue with the energy theme, when one goes back and looks at the existing contract with Russia on gas sales, there is some ambiguity in that contract. And, for example, one provision says that the prices over the five-year term of the contract cannot change with the agreement of both parties. And Ukrainian officials have said that the price of $95 per 1,000 cubic meters would continue to apply. Another provision says that price, however, is fixed only for the first 6 months. And we've seen comments by Russian officials and Gazprom that the price of gas to Ukraine is going up. So what do you think will happen on July 2nd when the six-month point? Are we in for another gas war?
Well, actually, I think that our Russian friends will be in a better position to answer, because if anyone is going to raise prices, it would be them. So then we just wait a bit. I think it's, for us, again, here I speak in my personal capacity, it's extremely important to engage in dialogue with the Russian side as soon as possible, but also with other important players in this field, meaning that we shall see, although I am myself a bit doubtful about that timing. Maybe it would happen a bit later, but most important that really... and our wish was, of course, to have the price sustained, or at least being discussed on the basis of understandable principles.
Mr. Vazik, Keith Smith from CSIS. I have a couple of questions, one comment and then a question. On the energy issue, I've been in Brussels a couple times this year. One of the things that strikes me is that while you do have an effective ambassador there working for the EU bureaucracy, without a government, there's been the impression within the EU bureaucracy and in EU governments that Ukraine's message about its position on the gas deals and the controversy is not getting through. Now with a new government, I would just say I hope that there's somebody from a high level from the government who can go to Brussels and the big capitals, Berlin, Paris, Rome, and that, because I think the Ukrainians are kind of losing the propaganda battle in that case. But as far enough on, I'd like to follow up on Neil's point, the question of domestic production. A lot of us have the impression that the the slowness in domestic production over the last few years has been more a focus, a problem of domestic structure of the bureaucracy. And in fact, the oil and gas interests, particularly the gas interests within Ukraine, have tried to keep these sector locked up and have kept foreign companies out. And we all know cases here of foreign companies that would like to get involved in Ukraine, especially American companies, but have been unable to kind of break through that barrier. And my question is that, do you think that the new government, that those, some of those barriers will be broken down so that it will be more friendly to foreign investors in the energy side?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Actually, maybe I will combine the comment on the comment, but also the answer. The fact is that if you look at the program, so you will see all the right things on general energy issues and specific energy issues. And concerning oil and gas matters, it speaks not only efficiency, but it also speaks about transparency. It speaks about eliminating shadow intermediaries. So all the right things are here. It also relates to the issues concerning more general principles of the energy policy. It's quite clear, and there is no secret, that one of the reasons there was so little movement on energy saving, that Ukraine was, as President Bush said, U.S. is addicted to oil, Ukraine was addicted to cheap gas for too long. And it was, in my perception, it was bad. In the long-term perspective, it was bad for Ukraine's economy. So now it's quite clear that we have very limited margin of time for maneuver for restructuring our energy sector. And in this sense, what is being declared will be pursued quite seriously. The domestic consumption, relaunching coal industry, development of a nuclear program, energy saving, diversification of energy sources, and things like that. And if you speak about the majority or well majority of the measures which are to be implemented, definitely they involve more than technologies and foreign capital. And in this sense, I'm quite sure American capital and foreign investment in general would be more than welcome. So everything would be done to attract foreign investment in this field. And very promising step, which I mentioned, Israel is bidding for Black Sea, which was very transparent, although we were domestic bidders, but it went to the best prepared. Those who were a bit disappointed, big companies, okay, they should prepare better for bidding in future. It's very simple. So in this sense, I would be quite optimistic and positive. And again, about speaking European dimension. So one of the points of the program, which is absolutely just, as we underscored importance of implementation of the European Energy Charter. It gives very good framework for all players of the energy sector. And we think it's also important to engage all players, both producers, transitors and consumers in a serious dialogue on energy issues so that we can ensure European energy security. And Ukraine wants to be a responsible and is a responsible player in this equation. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kathy Campbell. I'm with the U.S. Civilian Research and Development Foundation. Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on the prospects of getting a bilateral science and technology agreement signed between the U.S. and Ukraine. The old one expired, and both sides have been working for over a year now to get a new one. It's important because of the signal it sends to both sides about the importance and the tremendous potential for combining resources to address urgent, you know, energy or health issues, but also the agreement provides some useful clarity and a framework for administrative, legal, and financial issues.
Yeah, actually, it's a simple question. As the embassy have been pushing and will be pushing for the termination of this process, in a sense, bringing it to the logical completion so that we can sign this agreement. I presume as soon as we have the cabinet in place, many things will start moving much quicker.
Angela Sten from Georgetown University. Thank you, Mr. Ambassador, for your talk. I wanted to come back to the question of NATO. I have a two-part question. The first point is, could you explain to the audience why there's such opposition to NATO among the Ukrainian population? We saw what happened in Crimea a few weeks ago. And the second part of the question is, what do you think of the chances for a membership action plan for Ukraine at the Riga summit?
Thank you. Actually, I would say there are maybe two parts to the first part. If we speak about Feodosia, I would still argue it's actually it shows the necessity for a better education campaign, information and education campaign. But also it's a bit a case apart because it's much more complex than that. And it definitely there are too many factors that were involved over there, I mean, in Feodosia. I will stop here, but I presume everyone understands what I mean. So, secondly, as far as the whole thing is concerned, so I think that now we have a combination. So, first of all, definitely there is a lingering impact of the past, Cold War era, Cold War misconceptions, things like that, especially among the older and also middle-aged people like myself, for example. Of course, we are not uniform. There are pro, and there are, but still, who are still very much anchored in the past. So, thirdly, the fallout of 2004, especially, when the very mean, obnoxious, but I would recognize efficient steps were taken by the camp of the then prime minister. That's exactly what they managed to do to ensure outreach and to stimulate the worst misconceptions, prejudices still residual in the population, but especially in the area which they were targeting. And fourthly, it's of course deficiencies of the information campaign, because it's really important, as I said, to formulate the coherent message and to ensure that the message comes through. And what is also not negligible, that although we have been speaking about that, well, practically since mid-90s, very little has been done in practical, because actually the policy in this respect, less with EU, but also with EU, was more at the level of declarations, not in practical work. Now, as we embarked the practical path of joining NATO, I think it's also another incentive. Again, I always make the point, we shouldn't downgrade the seriousness, but we shouldn't over-dramatize, because we have been seeing fluctuations in public perception, and I think that's a task which can be effectively addressed, especially as among younger people, we have much greater acceptance, both for EU, which is in any case 60-65%, but also for NATO. Well, membership action plan, again, it's more, I don't know, if we have any representatives of the American government, then to Ukraine. I said that the program gives, I would say, a valid formulation. The actual Minister of Foreign Affairs confirmed continuation of the policy, and we are absolutely ready to make sure to make everything necessary to convince our partners that the decision on MEP should be done in 2008. So we still keep it as our target for this year. That's what I can tell you quite authoritatively. Thank you.
Henry Hale. Yeah, Henry Hale, George Washington University. I wonder how you would describe Ukrainian policy towards the Lukashenko regime in Belarus, and would you describe Ukrainian policy as being fully in agreement with the United States policy regarding concrete measures that might need to be taken regarding that regime? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I would say that in dealing with this challenge or this problem anyway. So there are two aspects. So first of all, we should be taken into account that in any case, Belarus is a neighbor of Ukraine. So the country with which we have common border, I would say common related problems. Secondly, it's we have, I would say, to a very great extent, a common history. So ties between population. Thirdly, it's an important trade partner and economic partner for Ukraine. And fourthly, we have common problems related to Chernobyl. So in any case, we have to address those issues quite efficiently. That's one part of the problem. The other part of the problem is definitely we are not blind to the processes which has been taken, which have been developing in this country for quite some time, to make sure that we do not shy off criticism is that we joined all statements made by the EU within the framework of the OEC, where this issue has been discussed quite actively. At the same time, we are working in close coordination with our American and EU partners to find the best ways to promote democracy in this country. Our non-governmental organizations are working very actively with the Belarusian non-governmental organizations. So we still think that, in a way, we should really find the best way to deal with the situation, and we think that any steps, punitive steps, which are to be taken, are to be taken not in a way to be counterproductive and make population suffer. But again, we are coordinating and working very closely with all democratic countries and democratic actors in this process.
Сергій Куделя, Ukrainian Service of Radio Free Party Liberty. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State David Kremer last week talked about the United States government's disappointment with the Ukraine's inability to organize joint military exercises in Crimea. And he specifically said he put the responsibility for that on the Ukrainian government, and he specifically said that Ukraine's promises were not matched with actions in this particular regard. How do you respond to the U.S. government official? How do you explain this failure on the part of the U.S. Ukrainian authorities? And the second related question, he also mentioned that the positive attitude towards Ukraine in NATO headquarters over the last 2 months dissipated for a number of reasons. How do you, as a Ukrainian official, how do you think you will be able to get this positive atmosphere back on track? Thank you.
Thank you. Actually, what hasn't been mentioned by Steve is that actually I am not a professional diplomat, and I started as a researcher. And one of the good things about that I always verify my sources. And when, after having read your account of David Kremer's statement, I actually had a chat with him, and definitely his interpretation was a bit different. Just for the starters. So, secondly, if I try to address the issue in substance, so definitely Feodosia was disappointed for everyone, and it also was disappointment for Ukrainian authorities. It was, as I said, answering the question, situation was very complicated for a variety of reasons. Definitely it was not spontaneous. It was very well planned. Unfortunately, we didn't manage to find adequate response, but it was a hard lesson, but it was very well, I would say, learned. And the measures have been already indicated by the National Security Council. President spoke about that, and I presume that in future we will take everything possible to avoid such situation. On the one hand, on the second hand, definitely we will proceed with military exercises this year as soon as we have the decision of the parliament. Maybe we make some modifications, but all exercises will take place. So the second point, it's difficult to say to which extent it dissipated. Again, what we hear from the NATO headquarters, and it's on the record, it's not off the record, is that definitely they, I would say, desire to cooperate with Ukraine is undiminished. Again, if you refer to this particular situation, we will definitely make sure that the message passes through, and I presume it has been done already. And definitely the best way to confirm our desire to continue our PES would be practical steps in public information, in practical policy decisions, and for that we wait until the government is starts to function. And again, I think that everything will be done. Again, I will venture to be a to make a prediction. So since maybe late August, definitely the work will gear up, although it hasn't ceased at any moment.
Sultan Khwaja, World Bank. Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador, for the excellent account you had given about the economic performance. I think it's very impressive, and you were very modest in what you said, because I worked in Ukraine from 1996 to 2000 with Harvard University USAID Economic Reform Program, and Ukraine that time had 10 years of continuous GDP decline, one of the largest in history for any non-war economy. And to come back from that is a remarkable achievement. And not only that, there are a lot of institutional, structural entanglements, like there were arrears of all kinds, pension arrears, tax arrears, even inter-enterprise arrears, barter economy. And you have disentangled yourself from all that, which is a remarkable achievement. Now, there's one issue you mentioned is a priority with the government, and that you mentioned is tax reforms. And this goes across, you know, issues of transparency, corruption. There's a huge amount of corruption in the tax administration and in the customs administration, and also for foreign investment point of view. So does the government have any framework on what kind of tax reforms they will have? Thank you.
Actually, I am not an expert on economics, so I will quote. Actually, as I have a coalition agreement with me, and there is a specific issue related to tax reform. Just bear with me for a second. So tax reform. So I only singled out some, to my mind, important issues. So it's relates to expanding the base of taxation to making it more evenly spread, minimizing tax benefits, introducing the real estate tax, introducing the uniform social tax with parallel easing of pressure on the payroll fund, further simplification of accounting procedures, and I think one of the most important parts, it's adoption of the tax code of Ukraine, something which has been discussed for some time. I also had a chance to speak with the current chairman of the tax administration, who was on the visit here in Kiev, in Washington. So he thinks that really we have come very close to the adoption of the code. At the same time, one thing which is to be done is also to implement all those right decisions in this direction, which have been passed, but somehow a bit, I would say, hovering, so in non-implementation. So I think that it's also important to do even before the tax code is adopted and implemented. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Ambassador. Miles Taylor from the Arms Control Association. A very large concern to much of the world in the former states of the Soviet Union is arms control, stopping weapons proliferation. There have been, as you know, many incidences of illegal arms transfers from Ukraine in the 1990s. And after an incident a few years ago of an illegal transfer of missiles to China, do you think that Ukraine has the problem under control and that export controls are strong enough?
Well, actually, again, to be correct, I would say that, first of all, there were actual cases and they were allegations. All the actual cases were investigated, have been investigated, and the appropriate actions have been taken. But of course, it shows again that although we have quite stringent system of export control, it showed that we should be paying more attention to that. And actually, we are, again, in very close cooperation context, consultations with our American partners, NATO partners in general on those issues, trying to make sure that that situation would be, any instances would be prevented in future. Although, let us be quite frank, we have those things popping up in different countries, in different parts of the world, so it's really very difficult to track it down unless the government is involved. And in our case, all those cases were, so to say, the manifestations of the private initiative, which definitely should be followed, persecuted, and perpetrators brought to justice. But meaning we are aware of some loopholes, and we are working on that to make sure that it doesn't happen in the future. So we are a responsible member of the international arms market.
Shannon Coburn with Carols. You mentioned you're not a professional diplomat, and I noticed you have a PhD in history.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a historical question. One I've asked here before of other people. Why do you think the Cold War ended?
Well, actually, it's a good question. I presume it will take some time to answer. Well, I would say, if I understand correctly what you mean, so definitely we have now a reemergence or emergence of new lines of tension, or some older lines of tension between countries, regions are manifesting themselves in a new form. That's, I would agree. But if you speak about the Cold War in its usually understandable and understood perception, so in this context, I think it's really over. One of the reasons the balance of powers changed, the nature of powers changed, so many factors involved. But again, I'm afraid if I try to to be imagined in the one spot, it will take a bit much time, but it's an interesting question. Thank you.
Okay, well, I think...
I was thinking about the answer. I'm sorry, but you must have known NATO is going to be, you know, a recurring issue. A related question is, I would argue part of the reason why NATO has a bad image in not just the Ukrainian public, but in many publics in the post-Soviet space, is because of, for good or ill, NATO's role in Kosovo and in the Balkans. And with the question of independence or future status for Kosovo still on an issue that will arise, where do you see Ukrainian official policy moving on the question of independence and sovereignty, and what is the right balance, and how do you see that playing out in this larger issue of Ukraine's future in the transatlantic alliance, possibly, or also its direction towards the European Union?
Well, I think it's another important question, not easy to answer. But being quite frank, I won't say that it was the Kosovo campaign, because over there, the stakes were more obvious and the reasons. It was the earlier campaign of bombardment of Belgrade and other targets in Serbia. And one of the reasons was that on the part of the NATO, again, it's my personal capacity, it's also the message wasn't well formulated and well sent. Mm-hmm. When it became clear what were the reasons, so it has become, I would say, clearer for the public as well. But at the first stage, definitely it helped our opponents, NATO opponents, to shift the public opinion. On Kosovo, our position, I can't go here in detail, but I would say that our position is that any solution should be extremely balanced, because we should avoid the situation when we can easily tip the balance in the region with independence of Kosovo, and also create a possibility for those who would like to, stimulate separatist ideas and actions to allude to the Kosovo as a sort of example and pretext. And I was quite open with our colleagues who are in favor of that, although there are some things which we would be willing to discuss and to work out the common approach. But it's quite clear, simply saying that it is not an example wouldn't work, because those who would like to use it as an example, as a reference point, will be trying to do that. So it's a challenge for all of us to definitely, we cannot face an interminable situation like the present one. We should be working on the solution. But again, when working on the solution, we should definitely keep in mind not only the consequences for the Kosovo itself, But for Kosovo, it's also still something what should be discussed in detail, but also in the regional and maybe even larger than the regional impact.
Okay, well, on that note, I think we'll bring today's discussion to a close. Let me ask you all to join me in thanking the ambassador for a very broad discussion, and also to join me in wishing Ukraine good luck in tomorrow's match.
Absolutely.